So we will move to our panel discussion, which we hope will continue the same passion and fire that Mayor Soglin just ignited in many of us. We have our Deputy Mayor, Gloria Reyes, who will be our timekeeper for this session. But really, we have remarkable leaders on the issues of immigration and issues regarding executive orders here on our panel today, and we are excited to have them with us. We'll start with Emilio De Torre from the ACLU of Wisconsin, and then we'll have Attorney Glorilai Lopez from Murphy and Desmond to be our second one. We'll then hear from Mario Garcia Sierra from representing Voices de la Frontera. We'll have Sufian Sohel from the Council on American Islamic Relations, and then we'll end with a familiar voice and prophetic voice from Nino Amato, the UN Human Rights Commission. Let's give them a hand of appreciation as they share their thoughts. And really considering what had just transpired and the executive orders that were written, all of the questions that we had to prompt discussion really have been thrown out the window. And so from their own perspectives, they will answer the and speak to the issues that are now pressing before us all. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Emilio De Torre. I'm the Director of Youth and Programs for the ACLU of Wisconsin. And given all the recent updates, we essentially wrote this on the ride over from Milwaukee. So I'm certain many of you have by now heard about people being detained at ports of entry around the country as a result of Trump's executive orders on Friday and of the ACLU's lawsuit to stop it. A federal judge granted the American Civil Liberty Union's request for a nationwide temporary injunction that will block the deportation of all people stranded in U.S. airports under Trump's new Muslim ban. The stay order in the ACLU lawsuit yesterday states that the government is enjoined and restrained from, in any manner, removing individuals with refugee applications approved by U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services as part of the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, holders of valid immigrant and non-immigrant visas, and other individuals from Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen legally authorized to enter the United States. And similar orders have been issued in ACLU cases filed yesterday in Washington State and Massachusetts. Right now, vigilance is still needed by all of us because, importantly, this state does not mandate release, and we may need to be prepared to file habeas petitions. However, these people cannot now be removed. It's important to make sure that the public knows that the ban has been suspended and that they should contact the ACLU if people are still being held. If you know anyone who is being detained under the executive orders, please call our hotline at 415-621-2488. This temporary restraining order doesn't prevent people from being interrogated, and it doesn't prevent them from being detained, and it does not require that people be admitted. Many people are being released, but many are not, and some are being transferred from airports into ICE detention. Last night, during the first few hours the restraining order was in effect, there were problems around the country with customs and border police noncompliance with the injunction and attempts to undermine its effect. Our ACLU team went back in, and we filed a motion to clarify and enforce, and we're awaiting a ruling from the judge. At the same time, many of you demonstrated and shut down the airports across the country. We know that the Department of Homeland Security's extreme vetting sets up government machinery for religious and ethnic discrimination under the pretext of national security. It is designed to keep Muslims out as a part of Trump's long-articulated plan and will set up an impossible vetting process tantamount to a ban. This goes against everything our country represents, going back to our founders' conviction in the United States as a nation where the government does not discriminate against any religion. Yesterday, people who were subjected to this screening were made to show their social media accounts, and they were asked about their views on President Trump and other intrusive acts. Yeah. These executive orders are meant to be scare tactics to the immigrant communities. They empower actions committed under the darkness of night in border communities especially. We may face potentially nationwide detentions and bulk deportations at the border without due process or removal proceedings. We probably also face changes to claims for protection against torture, especially for folks seeking amnesty to escape torture. We anticipate that ICE may increase in size as well as ICE detainers, and this could look, the other panelists will discuss more of this in depth, but it could be increasing with local law enforcement across the state, something referred to as 287G. It's important for all of us, and as Mayor Soglin emphasized, that we remember that honoring ICE detainers is voluntary and there's no requirement to do it, and we're not violating federal laws if we don't. Increased prosecution of people who come to the border might be coupled with expedited removal. And we must remember that we must continue to fight. Our communities are not evading federal law by maintaining sanctuary cities, and that Session and Trump will fail in this. All of us need to, especially immigrant families, we need to create plans with our families and create this with an immigration attorney. And we have to stand hand in hand like we're doing today with our communities. We have to get involved locally, across the state, and nationally. There are sheets on the side and on the tables outside at our table and others which give a very immediate and specific list of things that you can do, especially as families or loved ones of immigrants or immigrants yourselves. This is an extremely dark episode in our country's history, but there's no place we would rather be than fighting with you all.
Good afternoon. My name is Attorney Gloria Lee Lopez. I am an immigration attorney, and I was asked to speak yesterday. And so I'm here because I would like to, there's a lot of misinformation as to what the executive orders state, and a lot of us have not had a chance to perhaps review them. So I thought it would be helpful for us to be able to just take a few minutes and sort of review the highlights of the executive orders. Since most of us have been reading perhaps just news sources. So on Wednesday, so just a few days ago, we received two very extreme, in some accounts, executive orders from President Trump. I would like to start with those. The first one, the one that would affect most of us or most immigrant communities, would be the one about interior enforcement, since we're not currently in a border state. So what I'd like to point out regarding this executive order is that it is really a very drastic change from the executive order that we had with President Barack Obama that had been signed in, by him on November 20th of 2014. The executive order that went into effect on Wednesday replaced that previous executive order from President Barack Obama. The enforcement actions that, or the enforcement priorities that ICE now has in front of them, I'd like to review with you specifically because I think it's really helpful for people to actually hear them. First, individuals that are removable aliens, so those will be perhaps are individuals that are here undocumented. Individuals that have been convicted of any criminal offense would now become an enforcement priority. I repeat, convicted of any criminal offense. Whereas before, under the previous executive order, we had individuals that had been convicted of a felony, aggravated felony, a significant misdemeanor, or three non-significant misdemeanors were considered priorities. Right now, we're actually talking about any criminal offense, even minor criminal offenses. So that's number one. Number two, someone who has been charged with any criminal offense where such charge has not yet been resolved. So anyone who actually then comes to, you know, be arrested by the Madison Police Department, any local enforcement agency, or the Sheriff's Department, those would be considered whether they actually get notified or not. But if they come to the attention of ICE, those individuals would be considered enforcement priorities. That's B. C, someone who has committed acts that constitute a chargeable criminal offense. and that would be even if someone has not yet been investigated or criminally charged for that alleged criminal offense. That's very, very extreme. D, someone who is engaged in fraud or willful misrepresentation in connection with any official matter or application before a government agency. This is not just about immigration misrepresentation. This could be seen perhaps for someone who applies for a driver's license and maybe were to list accidentally that that person is a USA citizen, for example, or a lawful permanent resident, that person is not. That person would also be considered, or anyone who engaged or is alleged to engage in fraud or willful misrepresentation. E, has abused any program related to the receipt of public benefits, and that is whether the person has received public benefits or not. The next one is whether someone is subject to a final order of removal and has not yet complied with that final order of removal. Prior to this executive action from Wednesday, we had individuals, the priorities were, in terms of ICE, individuals that had final orders of removal that had been entered after January 1st of 2014. That is no longer the case. And finally, in the judgment of an immigration officer, otherwise, someone who would otherwise pose a risk to public safety or national security. So those are the current ICE enforcement priorities. Even though on Monday of this week, President Trump indicating that there had been a freeze of any federal hiring, except military, on Wednesday, 48 hours later, we had this executive action, which clearly indicates under Section 7 that there would be an hiring of at least 10,000 additional immigration officers, and that is will be within ICE Immigration Customs Enforcement. There's also within the other executive action, executive order from the president that was announced simultaneously on Wednesday, there is also an additional hiring of 5,000 Customs and Border Protection officers, CBP officers. Those are the Border Patrol officers or the people who work at the airports that are currently detaining individuals due to the subsequent ban. But anyways, what I'm trying to state here is we have not seen probably ever, and I have been an immigration attorney for over 16 years, I've never actually seen this list of priorities. This is very, very extreme. Someone who's, I just like to go back because I have to sort of read it a few times just to really get my head around it. Again, someone who has not yet been charged with a criminal offense, just they believe, perhaps suspect that the person has committed a criminal offense. Or someone who has been charged but yet not been convicted of a criminal offense also would be considered an ICE enforcement priority. There are also civil fines and penalties. It states that as soon as practically possible, but not later than a year from the date of this order, the Secretary of Homeland Security shall issue guidance and promulgate regulations when required by law to ensure the collection of all fines and penalties that are authorized to be assessed against aliens who are lawfully present in the United States and those who facilitate their presence in the United States. We're wondering what that means to whether then us, immigration attorneys, community organizations, or those of us who lend a helping hand, whether we would be assessed fines for actually helping individuals to be able to fight for their rights. I'd like to state that even though there are going to be 10,000 additional ICE officers that will be hired and will be part of this quote-unquote deportation force that Trump would like to implement, or the additional 5,000 CBP officers who are also going to be joining their forces, everyone here in the U.S., given our Constitution, has the right to if the person is placed in removal deportation proceedings, the person has the right to see an immigration judge. And there's been no mention since the president hopefully has realized that he does not have the authority to do this without Congress. But essentially, the president has not mentioned at all whether, in fact, immigration courts nationwide are going to be receiving additional funding. This would be an issue for Congress to decide, because even though there perhaps will be, and there likely will be, a lot more removal proceedings instituted against individuals, we're going to be fighting those cases in immigration court. As of last week, there were 534,000 cases pending nationwide in immigration courts. 534,000. Right now, for example, as an immigration attorney here in Madison, Wisconsin, I have court cases for clients for 2021. So if perhaps we have a million more individuals, perhaps two, three, who knows how many individuals get placed in removal proceedings, I don't know when those next hearings will be, again, unless the infrastructure for immigration courts nationwide gets increased, and the only way to increase that is by appropriating the necessary funds. And the only entity that has, obviously, or the only branch of our government that has the ability to do so would be Congress. I think my time is up. There's a lot more that I would like to discuss with you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have, since I just got through one of the executive orders. But I think one of the other panelists will be addressing further questions. Thank you.
Muy buenas tardes. Buenas tardes. Muy buenas tardes. So, good afternoon. My name is Mario Garcia Sierra. And yes, I'm a member of Voces de la Frontera, a statewide organization. Yes, give it up for Voces. Statewide organizations based in Milwaukee and has been fighting for undocumented workers for the last 16 years. Raise your hand if you're a Voces member. Yes, we have several members here, but that's something that you can do right now. Become a Voices member so we can have more resources to help this fight. So in Voces de la Frontera, we have been super busy over the last year especially, but over the last 10 years. And we are really concerned about a couple of things. But the issue of rights, that's something that it's always at the front line, because those constitutional rights haven't been respected to people who have been deported in this community. For example, we have seen many cases where immigration officers show up to the homes with not a warrant from a judge, and they enter the home, and then they start asking many, many questions and corner people so that they have to tell what their immigration status is. So that's what Voices is working on, how to train people so that they know, one, what their rights are, and then how to exercise them. As Voices, we also working really hard to create relationships with local law enforcement, because right now what we have in front of us is a deportation machine. And our goal is to ensure that local law enforcement won't act on behalf of ICE. If it was up to this administration, they would like local law enforcement asking and acting like immigration officers. And they might go that route. But again, we want to see more law enforcement agencies coming against these policies that will destroy our entire communities, and especially here in Wisconsin. So that's what we are working really, really hard right now. And you know what? I have to tell you, and this is, I'll put myself on the line and tell you that the work hasn't been easy. Here in Madison, we have a great chief, Chief Cobble back there. But the truth is that around Dane County, from law enforcement, we don't receive the same support as we have here in Madison. So immigrants who are here in Madison, we feel somehow safe, but we have family members, friends outside Madison. So if you live in one of those communities, I think it's very important for you to reach out to your local law enforcement. So, and they say that they want to hire more ICE agents. So what are they going to be doing? Expect workplace rates. So that's where we need local law enforcement, not to cooperate with them in any of those rates. In that executive order, there is something that is really of a concern to bosses, and that is a program that is called Secure Communities. Secure Communities was created under the Bush administration, and that was the program that the Obama administration used to deport over 2 million immigrants from this country during his tenure in office. So in Section 5 of that executive order, this administration is reinstituting Secure Communities. And what is Secure Communities, you might ask? Secure Communities is a Department of Homeland Security program designed to identify immigrants in U.S. jails who are deportable under immigration law. And we already told you who is deportable now. Under Secure Communities, participating jails submit arrestee's fingerprints not only to criminal databases but to immigration databases as well, allowing immigration and customs enforcement access to information on people who are held in jails. So they have, they give a presence via technology to agents in, in these jails. So really, what we would like to see from Wisconsin is, sheriffs basically stating that they won't honor any order from ICE to hold and detain people only because they are here with no papers. So I know that Sheriff Mahoney is here, and I know that this is a hot debate, but I think when it comes to sanctuary, this is what we want. We want a jail in Dane County that doesn't honor these ICE holders. So again, if you are out of Madison, please keep this in mind when you engage with your neighbors and also with law enforcement about ICE holders, because I haven't talked to the sheriff lately, but I really hope that is his commitment now not to honor those ICE holders based only on the nature that the person maybe has been arrested but hasn't been charged and all of that. So thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum, good afternoon. Peace and blessings to all my brothers and sisters of different faiths and backgrounds, of different political parties, of different sexual orientations. We're all here, and it makes me so, I was crying tears just a moment ago because seeing this room full of, in my quick math, over 1,500 of you, I think we should all give you a round of applause for taking the effort to come out here today to listen, to engage, to talk about all these issues that are affecting us as Americans living in this country. My name is Sufyan Sohail. I'm the Deputy Director and General Counsel of the Chicago Office of the Council on American Islamic Relations. We're a nonprofit advocacy organization tasked with the promotion and protection of the First Amendment rights of our Muslim American community. In my drive up from Chicago today, thank you. In my drive up from Chicago today, I was reflecting upon, you know, the actions taken around the country yesterday about the immense number of attorneys that I witnessed at O'Hare Airport yesterday, trying, just sitting there camped out, ready at a moment's notice to defend the rights of all those detained, and was trying to think of what I wanted to come and convey to you. So many mixed emotions that all of us must have. The first one, as a civil rights attorney, I'm enraged. I'm enraged that our Constitution is being ripped up, that people's rights are being questioned. I had the honor, and if you haven't, I encourage each of you to do this, to attend a swearing-in ceremony for recently, for people who are becoming citizens in this country. You'll see just as much diversity as you see in this room, from people from over 100 countries raising their hand and promising to fulfill the rights and responsibilities as American citizens. What's even more heartwarming to see is the 200, 300 plus people who go with them, their families, friends, all of them with gleams of hope in their eyes, who want those same rights and privileges. We're a country that throughout history has stood for freedom, safety, opportunity. These are the reasons that all of us, no matter how far back we can trace our heritage and lineages to this country, we're all coming here for the same reason. We want to escape persecution in our home countries. We want to have access to the best schools in the world. We want to live in communities that we can freely practice our faiths and be who we are and not be worried that because of how we pray, who we pray to, different lifestyle choices we make, that we won't be persecuted. That, and that's why all of these people choose to continually come to this country and should have the right to continue to do so. But there's also fear. As an American Muslim and seeing so many of my brothers and sisters in my faith here, there's such fear in my community. Just, you know, a year ago on July 4th of all days, 2015, I had a 100-pound, and I give her weight because I know it's rude to say, share a woman's weight, but I'm sharing it with you because four Chicago Police Department officers tackled her on her way up to an elevated train and afterwards allegedly abused both mentally and physically to her. After a year of distress and figuring out what to do, us, along with some of our partners, were able to file a lawsuit both against Chicago Police Department and the City of Chicago. I don't know how many of you saw, but a couple weeks ago, the Department of Justice came down on the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department, says that we have to reevaluate, you know, the trust issues between local law enforcement and the people. So many immigrant populations, so many local populations, our African-American community, brothers and sisters, our Latinx community, brothers and sisters, we're all, there's so much fear between local law enforcement, and it warms my heart to see so many of the police officers here in this crowd. So please give them a round of applause for being here to support us as we talk about these issues. We have families being thrown off of airplanes, and now we have even citizens being detained at the airport and their families not knowing what's going on. While they're being left out, but they're not being denied medication, denied food. These are reports of people just in the last 24 hours being released. In New York, one of the first people that they reported was a contractor who worked for the U.S. military translating in countries like Iraq for the last decade. But that person who risked their life for America is now not allowed back to a country where they're legally allowed to be in. This is ridiculous. But then now I have hope. As I said, we have a room full of people here. We have attorneys around the country who are engaged and committed to fight. And the fight, this is just the beginning. We all need to do a better job of, A, getting over our own biases that we may have with one another. We're all born in society and culturally. There's a lot of misunderstanding. And as we've seen throughout media and discourse, the anti-Islamophobia that's apparent, we must all stand up and say that we will not tolerate that, that we are all here together as equals in this country, that we all have a right to belong in this country, that we all want the same freedoms, we all want the safety, security promised to us by our forefathers to live in this country. You know, it was so great to hear you speak and to watch you perform for us today. And, you know, we forget the histories that we've seen and witnessed and the tragedies throughout American history. So with our Native American brothers and sisters, we've also witnessed discrimination against the Italians, the Irish, the Jews, the Japanese. Almost every racial ethnic group has faced discrimination because of who they are or where they come from. And it is up to each of us now to stand up together and say that we will not tolerate that, that we are not going to put up with this anymore, and that we will demand our freedom and justice, and that America will remain the land of the free, where all those seeking refuge have a home and place to belong in. You know, and I hope that the cities around the world, and especially this country, can take example from what you are doing here today. And again, I just want to thank you for welcoming me here and being able to share the fears of my community, and hope that moving forward we can all work together, you know, and make this country the country that we're all proud of. Thank you.
Let's hope and pray that Milwaukee County Sheriff Clark is not going to be ahead of Homeland Security, because he is still one of the top 10s being considered. Now, let me start out by saying I am the grandson of two immigrant grandfathers, Tony Schiavo and Dominic Salvatore Amato. And the grandmother is also an immigrant, Angela Eliotto. Now, like people who are fleeing Syria and other parts of the Middle East, they came to this country to escape the terrorism and the fascism in those other countries. Both Dominic, Tony, and Angela fled Italy to escape the rising fascism and the Bolshevism that was sweeping Eastern and Western Europe. As president of the Coalition Wisconsin Aging Group, we protect the rights of approximately 1.3 million elderly and people with disabilities. And earlier this week, our board agreed to revamp our legislative congressional agenda that basically advances, protects the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and we will be involved in this fight. And we have approximately 125,000 members statewide with a lot of different views, but I do know they understand history and they embrace this. Now, in the last 24 hours, we had the 35th President of the United States, who happens to be a billionaire, do an executive order on immigration that has put shockwaves around the world and in this country. He has alienated our friends in Mexico and other parts of Europe. We have seen for the first time students with student visas that attend universities, and I teach part-time at UW-Platteville, who are having a hard time getting back into this country so they can go back to school. They're keeping scientists and educators who are here either in high school or colleges to teach and to learn or to get a PhD. And they can't get in the country at the moment. So that is what we're up against. Let me say this. It is not just 35th president, or 45th, wish it was the 35th. Anyone would have been better. I hate to say this. I have to give George W. Bush credit, because when there was Islamophobia occurred after 9/11, he stood up and said it was going to stop. And let's not forget that some of the harshest criticism has come from some of the establishment within the Republican Party, and I will say this, thank goodness for John McCain and Graham, who's fighting the stuff that's going on in Washington. But let me just reflect on history. Paul Soglin said it best about the cities and the mayors getting together. And another grandson of immigrant parents, Bellagio, who in fact is the mayor of New York, said this even before executive orders came down. He said, if all Muslims are required to register, we will take legal action to block it. If the federal government wants our police officers to tear apart immigrant families, we will refuse to do so. If the federal government tries to depart law-abiding citizens with no legal representation, we will provide them legal representation. If the U.S. Justice Department, and you know that Mr. Sessions being considered, and he has a long history of racism in speaking to white supremacist groups. Bellagio said, if the U.S. Justice Department orders local police to resume stop and frisk, we will not comply and we will fight it under constitutional rights. We will not trade in neighborhood policing for racial profiling. And if there are threats in defunding Planned Parenthood, we will provide funding for every woman in New York City that is needed. He went on to say, if Jews or Muslims or any members of the LGBT or any other ethnic community is victimized or attacked, we will find their perpetrator, arrest them, and prosecute them. And let me say this. I'm in this fight for a lot of reasons, like you are. But what keeps me going when I thought at this stage of my life, after just being qualified for Medicare, that life would be a lot different. But I have two adult daughters, Nikki, 36, and with her I have three granddaughters, Lucia, who's 10, Julia Throza, who's 6, and little Minnie, who is 2, and my other daughter, who's 32, is due today for her first child. So when we talk about coming together, let's embrace the flag. Let's take the Constitution. We understand it and we own it. And let's preserve it and protect it. And when, not if, there is a Muslim registry, I can tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to register as a Muslim and a recovering Catholic. And flood that to send a powerful message to Washington. Now, as a teacher of history and political science and now at the university, it is amazing how there's been some incredibly intelligent people of the past that have warned us. The first political book in history was Plato's Republics. And in there they warned that democracy can easily be taken over when inequality grows and people feel a sense of hopelessness, that a dictator will step in and fill the vacuum. Followed by the rise and fall of the Third Reich, which you all know, and people thought that funny little politician with the mustache could be controlled, and he couldn't. Then, 1984, what's up is down, what's blue is black, alternative facts, it's here, folks. And there's a book that a lot of people didn't get a chance to read, and I'm making my class read it. It is a book by Thomas Frank called The Wrecking Crew. Came out in 2008. He looked at supply-side economics, which is voodoo economics. Even George Horatio Bush said it was voodoo economics. He looked at the deregulation under both the Clinton administration and the Bush administration that caused the greatest recession in the world. And he warns us that with this last 50 years, you've had the true evil alliance of the Koch brothers, the right-wing Tea Party that want to drown government in the bathtub, and white supremacists, the KKK, who want to turn the clocks back to the pre-Civil War. Later on today, you're going to hear from Masoud. He's going to talk about a new organization called United Against Hate. We are formulating that now. You'll hear more later. But we're going to embrace the Constitution. We are going to do what's needed, but we can't do it alone. We must continue to fight for the sake of our children and grandchildren. Thank you very much.
Let's give our panel a continued hand clap of appreciation for their thoughts, comments, passion, and dedication at work. Time I'm going to have our United Against Hate building an inclusive community, and we're going to transition. Oh, Jesus. Okay. So they actually want to allow a Q&A to happen with 1,500 people in the room. So I'm going to ask that if there's anybody with a pressing one, two questions, to have that brother stood up first like he lost his mind in the back. I can't hear you, so you need to come on up. Come on.
Is Madison a sanctuary city? And if we are not, what do we need to do to become one?
Is Madison, I think Paul Soglin said that. Is Madison a sanctuary city? If so, what do we need to do to become one? On the next panel, we'll address that.
If I can just add, because something was partly touched on by some of the legal counsel here, and that is there is threat of taking away funding to anyone who resembles a sanctuary city. Here's the half-ass philosophy in that. That funding
would be taken away from the police department that's doing community neighborhood policing and anti-terrorism. You take that away, you break the trust of communities, and crime will flourish. The second thing, let me just say, between a Muslim registry, what's going on with blocking people coming into this country where some can't seek your relatives, you are playing in the hands of ISIS. They are cheering this president on because he is going to create unrest in this country, so we need to show that we're going to fight it.
Brother right there in the blue hat. He's asking about the DACA program. What's going to happen to the DACA program?
Good question. We don't know what's going to happen with the DACA. DACA is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Is the policy that was instituted by President Obama back in June 2012. Under this program, we've had nearly 800,000 young individuals who have come forward to apply for DACA benefits. DACA allows employment authorization, in a renewable period, in a 2-year renewable period, and defer action, meaning that they do not get removed, deported from the United States during that 2-year period. We've had individuals have actually not only gotten DACA initially, but have already applied and obtained DACA for a second time, and many others are going to be then going in for their third renewal this year. We don't know if the DACA policy is going to be canceled, if that executive action will be taken away by President Trump. During the campaign, he indicated that he would do it on the first day of office. Obviously, that did not happen last Friday. What we do know is that the Bridge Act, which is a legislative, essentially would be DACA, but done on a legislative, through the legislative congressional process, was introduced on December 9th during last Congress, and it has been reintroduced as of a couple of weeks ago in this new Congress. And we don't know if we have enough votes to win this currently in Congress. So we need everyone to contact both of our senators and our congressmen and women to express our support in favor of the Bridge Act. If DACA were to be canceled, we don't know if it's going to be canceled, to answer your question, right away, or what we did hear as of last Thursday is that they were considering to canceling DACA as of the date of when their employment authorization of those individuals would end. But that's not really an official word. We're certainly very hopeful that DACA will not be canceled. And in fact, we will be able to come up with a congressional fix to this issue, and hopefully as part of a larger comprehensive immigration reform bill that would go through Congress. But this is not going to happen, particularly in a Republican-controlled Congress, if we do not step forward and express our support. I believe, though, the majority of the American people do believe that comprehensive immigration reform should pass, and that there should be a path to some type of lawful status for individuals that are here undocumented, including the young individuals that have come forward to register for DACA.
Thank you so much. Last question.
He has repeatedly said that he'll just transfer funds from the military to accomplish his deeds and not go to Congress for any of these changes and challenges and hiring all these extra people. So, is that correct? And do I misunderstand that?
Right now we have a budget, a federal budget that is basically good through, I want to say it's March. I don't remember if it's March or April. So we're going to be seeing some budget fights in Congress. Most of those things are not going to happen. Thank God, based on our constitutional democracy, Congress holds the purse, not the president, although he might think otherwise. But I think this, we're going to be seeing this in Congress. So we really do need, everyone to contact, our members of Congress to be able to help us express our views in favor of, you know, different priorities. Do we really need this border wall? And we know Mexico is not going to pay for it. Do we need to really spend and add to the federal deficit, 25 or $200 billion to build this wall? I don't know. I would argue not. I think we can use those dollars in a different way. But in terms of many of these things, we are going to need Congress to pass the budget, and that's really not up to the president, I don't think. I don't know how he would do it otherwise, at least not pass the current budget that we have in place until March or April for this fiscal year.
There are several paths we can take, exactly bringing this fight to Congress over monetary issues and how they're going to prioritize the federal budget. The other one is a legal fight. The moment those executive orders can be examined, they can be challenged constitutionally. Mm-hmm. And what is clear historically is even Judge Roberts, who's currently the Chief Justice, said that any order relative to taking funds away from Fed or from local government over immigration has to be clearly defined, and it's way too broad, which is expected from a group of idiots that he's bringing on board. They really don't get it. And let me say this. There is one thing that Wisconsin has over the other 49 states. We have a guy who lives in Janesville who's the third most powerful person, and we should not demonstrate in his backyard. We should hold a vigil that we're there day and night, night and day, week after week, to let it be known, peacefully flying the flag and doing that in an organized fashion with elderly and children, and kill them with kindness and bring attention to Wisconsin and put fear in the politicians, because it's the only thing they understand, but we'll kill them with love. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So as the mayor comes up, we had a panel of y'all come on down. Thank you so much. As the mayor comes, there's going to be some follow-up. Let's give him love, appreciation. Thank you. Going to be follow-up for small groups to set priorities on February 21st to continue with the next steps at 6:30 p.m. at the Madison Public Library. That's February 21st at 6:30 at the Madison Public Library. And then lastly, if you have not signed in, please do so before you leave on the back table. We want to follow up and continue to organize and continue to organize and continue to organize. Thank you all so much.
While everybody in the next panel gets seated, or maybe not, let me just try and answer a little more detail about the question of funding. I'd mentioned that we had our annual or semi-annual mayor's conference meeting last week in Washington, and there are a number of areas that is a very deep concern. Madison, given our size, is a fairly typical city. We receive about $30 million annually, $33 million annually in federal funding. What is that for? Well, probably the most important part of it is for affordable housing. It is for community development block grants, which so many agencies within our city receive support and funding. Transportation, particularly public transportation, are some of the key areas. As you'll recall, whenever President Obama's administration was challenged in the courts, it was usually done in Texas, because those were the most conservative federal courts to initiate blockage of progressive action. Well, what's most likely to happen is that just as this initial injunction regarding the president's executive order was initiated in New York, if there are going to be legal challenges, and there will be legal challenges every moment they attempt to do something to any one of our cities, they will be initiated most likely in California or New York, because we know how the system works as well, and we're going to do it where we get the most sympathetic federal judiciary decisions And we here in Wisconsin will file amicus curiae briefs. We will come in as a friend of the court in these various federal jurisdictions and support them. But there are cities like Anaheim, California, with a Republican mayor. There are cities like Hartford, Connecticut, with a Democratic mayor, and the other cities that I'd mentioned earlier. We are all unified. We are going to stay the course together, and we are going to fight every step of the way. Everybody's giving counts as to how many people are here.
I know. How many?
Well, we've got the experts. I've spoke with Greg McManus, who's the director of Monona Terrace. There were 1,000 seats initially set up. There were 700 seats set up for the overflow. There are well over 300 people standing. You do the math.
So, Mayor, we need another Monona Terrace. Whenever we organize event like this, the one we organized before, in January last year, we planned for 200, and then 550 people showed up. Here, we planned for 500 to 1,000, and you can see how big of a crowd is. So I think we need to plan a little bit better moving forward.